Please can you remind me, if you'll be so kind, staring out into space, asking God to hear my case, trying to think of all things past, how long will my memory last? The purple angel, purple angel.
Everyone, and I'm so glad you could join us today at Alzheimer's Speaks Radio, where our focus is to shift our dementia care from around the world, from crisis to comfort, and we've been doing that since 2011. So I am thrilled that you can be with us today to see another model that's out there that is really shifting its care culture. So don't forget, while you're listening today, to go ahead and subscribe, so you can learn and share new techniques, tips, and resources to help you live graciously alongside dementia. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Lori LeBay, and I'm your host. I'm also the daughter of a mother who lived with dementia for 30 years. So I get the guilt, the isolation, the frustration, the exhaustion of caring for another, but I also totally love what I've learned about the path of joy, purpose, and passion. So listen in and let us help you find that second path of joy, purpose, and passion. Now, before I introduce our guest today, I always like to give a shout out to a few companies. And one is just, I don't know if you guys know this, but September is World Alzheimer's Month. And it's a great month to increase awareness about dementia. So again, I would really appreciate your shares with this. Everyone around the world is trying to lift this disease so we get more attention, more dollars behind it, and get more people understanding so that we can remove some of the stigmas also attached to it. But I want to also give a shout out to a group in Minnesota that I'm working with. We call ourselves Roseville AD, or the Roseville Alzheimer's and Dementia Community Action Team. And we have put together an airport travel survey. And that survey is meant for anybody living with a dementia diagnosis or a travel companion who has used an airplane, gone through an airport. It'll take you about 30 to 40 minutes. It is long, but it's going to collect a ton of data. And we're asking people around the world to fill this out, because we know one story here and most likely apply in another airport someplace else. So please go to alzheimerspeaks.com. You'll see a big airplane right at the top. Click on it. It'll bring you to the survey, and feel free to share that with others. I also want to give a shout out to Stall Catchers. That is a game that people can participate in, all ages, even people with dementia play this that have early onset. Stall Catchers is a game that we can play, and we can actually be helping researchers analyze data by our game playing. So go to stallcatchers.com and learn more about that. And the last shout out I'm going to give is to the Memory Cafe Directory. If you're not familiar with memory cafes, they are a wonderful concept that bring people with early and mid dementia along with their care partners together so that they can talk with others who understand the disease, really build a sense of community. And, you know, it's one of the things I love most about my job. We get together a couple times a month for a couple of hours, and so many times my cheeks hurt from laughing. We just support each other no matter what anyone is going through. And so go to the memorycafedirectory.com to learn more, find out what is in your community, or maybe, just maybe, your community needs one and you can start one. I also want to give a shout out to companies that might be looking at trying to expand their brand footprint. And they can do that by leveraging our content and our platforms here on Alzheimer's Speaks. And so I'd love to talk with anybody who is interested in that. We have a variety of ways to be able to increase people's knowledge of your products, services, and tools that you have to offer. And last, I would be amiss if I didn't thank our listeners. You guys are wonderful. You are loyal. And because of your likes, your clicks, and your shares on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and many others that I probably don't even know of, by working together, you have really built a sense of community and collaboration. And with that comes comfort. And so thank you. It's just a privilege to work with all of you to win this battle against dementia. You can always go to alzheimerspeaks.com to get further information about all of our initiatives. So with no further ado, let me get to why we're here. Today, we are really excited to have Gus Noble back with us. He is the president of the Chicago Scots, which was established in 1845 as Illinois' St. Andrew Society. And the Chicago Scots are the oldest charity in the state of Illinois and one of the world's largest Scottish cultural organizations. The Chicago Scots have their principal charity as Caledonia Senior Living and Memory Care, which is a unique senior living community that is peacefully located in the forest preserves just a few miles west of downtown Chicago. Who the heck would think that there could be a community like that? Welcome, Gus. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, Laurie. Great to be with you again. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have you. Now, before we talk about Caledonia House and the Scots, I always like to ask all of my audience or all of my guest members to share with our audience if they've been personally touched by dementia in their own circle of friends or families. Do you mind sharing that with us?
Not at all, no. Both my grandmothers lived with dementia back in the UK. I was very close to both of them since they took care of me when mum and dad both worked. I'd go and spend time with my grandmothers and developed a really close relationship, a unique relationship with either one. And it was, of course, tragic and very hard. But somebody said something to me at some point, somewhere along the line, that has really kind of resonated as I thought about my grandmothers and others of my friends who live with dementia, and that they may not remember us, but we must remember them. So I take with me those memories of the days I spent just with one grandmother or the other. Perhaps it was shopping, you know, going for groceries or playing the piano or taking a walk in the garden. And those are the memories that she continues to live in, or they continue to live in my heart through.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Now, September, like I had mentioned, is World Alzheimer's Month. And so that's a time to really raise awareness and challenge all the stigmas that can surround dementia and memory loss in today's society. I'm wondering, Gus, if you could share with us, what percentages of families do you find are moving into Caledonia Senior Living and Memory Care because of a diagnosis?
I would say about 50% are moving in with some kind of dementia. You know, we're a community like most communities that serve seniors that draws from the local area around us. But we also will pull from, we're a Scottish cultural organisation that's been around for 175 years. So we pull from within the cultural community that surrounds us also. So we perhaps have some people that will come to us through a natural inclination and feeling comfortable at Caledonia Senior Living. But there's something quite unique about the culture that is imbued through the Scottish cultural side of the organisation. When I say the culture, I'm talking about of Caledonia Senior Living itself. Scotland is a place where family and friends, kith and kin, are so important. And the organisation was literally built to bring something of Scotland, of home, to Chicago for those people who left and were immigrant Scots. And so a sense of family and a sense of home have always been the kind of twin beacons that have led the way of this organisation. And I think if you really kind of drill down and think about it, those two things, a sense of family and a sense of home, can really be the powerful forces that stop people from feeling institutionalized or commodified and so on. So I think we've become known as a place where people who are living with dementia or some type of memory loss will feel respected and purposeful and comfortable and so on. So at various levels of care, there would be a different proportion of people who are living with some kind of diagnosis. Our sheltered care is the predecessor to the assisted living license. It's been around for a long time, and probably a smaller percentage of the people living in that part of the community would have a dementia diagnosis. And as you look at certainly our new McLean House, which opened 3 years ago, part of the move-in requirement, if you like, is a dementia diagnosis. So all of the people living there are facing dementia. Then as you get to skilled nursing, there is a higher proportion, certainly, than in sheltered care, but not quite as high as the McLean House.
Okay, wonderful. Do you see, you know, in terms of people coming, you know, to live in your communities, do you see specific stages more common, or does it just really depend on who's moving in on that particular moment?
It really depends on who's moving in. And, you know, I'm sure you and your listeners know that there are good days and bad days, and the good days can be, you know, seized, and our staff recognize when people are having good days, and the impact of getting the right people in the right jobs and in the right capacities to support residents and their families can increase the number of good days. And that really has an impact on, you know, the variance of how much people are living with the conditions. So I'm so proud of the teams that work at Caledonia Senior Living. They really are the rock stars that will, you know, carry this community in our care and the purpose we're here for in an incredible way. They have, you know, you use the word passion and promise and purpose. I see that when I look at my colleagues at Caledonia Senior Living. I couldn't be prouder of them.
That's nice to hear. Yeah, I don't hear that all the time when I go around the country speaking and training. And so that's nice to see that you have developed that in your community. Now, it's been 3 years, you know, since we had you on when you first opened Caledonia House, and now it is being rededicated as the McLean House due to a new donor. And I'm wondering if you can tell us how the house has progressed and developed, you know, over those 3 years.
Thank you for asking. I'm so proud, not just of the staff, but of the home itself, our homes. There are two small homes within McLean House. Each home has 10 residents. The residents are supported by cross-trained universal workers or care partners, as we have called them. And I heard you use that phrase earlier too, Laurie. The two homes have really been informed by the people who live and work there. We anticipated this. You know, my colleagues and I sat for 18 months. I took one day a month for 18 months and took our entire senior leadership team and several members of our frontline care staff offline. And we sat in a large room at Caledonia Senior Living and we said, we're going to design these homes together. It's not going to be, you know, the guys in the ties in the corner office or board members or any one particular person or group of people. This is going to be a collaborative effort, because I know what I don't know. And I know that the frontline caregivers who know our residents much better than me are in a much better position to help design the home. So we spent all this time investing in developing everything from how laundry works to how food service would work, or meal preparation, or the dishes, or, you know, this, that, and the other, evacuation in the event of an emergency and so on. But at the same time, we knew as soon as we turned the key and opened the door that all of that work only got us to a point, and the true identity, the true feeling of the home would only be defined by the people who lived and worked there. And so it's been the case. There have been a few surprises along the way, mostly very pleasant surprises. I think probably the obvious one is we thought the homes would be appealing to people who are perhaps in the earlier stages of dementia. As it's turned out, it's probably more the mid stage. The wonderful thing is we are resident directed, and it's been a wonderful thing to see that residents who had spent their lives not necessarily getting up at a very early time in the day, that they really feel that the late afternoon, early evening and into the later evening are the times when they're more active and productive. They've carried on living with that rhythm. And it turns out that the whole house begins to live at a similar, or whole home lives at a similar rhythm. And there's a wonderful thing that the incredibly deep thinking and deep feeling and understanding and compassionate staff that we have created for people who were more active at nighttime. They found that a couple of them were particularly passionate about art. And so they created a group called the Midnight Painters Group. And these artists were painting murals. Then we have a Highland Games, a Scottish festival. And we needed one of those scenes where you can poke your head through a hole and around you is painted a scene of mountains or so on. Well, at the Scottish festival, of course, kids love Loch Ness and the Loch Ness monster Nessie. So the Midnight Painters created this scene of mountains and lochs in Scotland with the Loch Ness monster. And we took it to our Scottish festival where we welcomed 10 to 15,000 people. And all the kids who were there were, you know, having a great time poking their heads through and joining Nessie in this scene. And I thought, what a wonderful thing for these folks who were living and working at the McLean House to have done for a new generation. So it's really been a wonderful thing to see the houses self-identify and self-direct themselves. So I think as prescriptive as we try to be, the real battle has been won by the house, the homes, defining their own identity and rhythms. It's a great thing to see.
Well, and I think that that's nice that you allow them to do that. Some companies don't allow that just kind of organic growth, which I think is, you know, to me, the clincher. You know, it gets everybody's buy-in. So kudos to you guys for that. Can you share a little bit more about some of the current programs that you have for residents? You mentioned the Midnight Painters, and I love that title of the group to begin with, because it just is out of the box. And, you know, so often people have difficult time sleeping, and now they've got something to do. So can you share with us maybe some other programs as well?
Yeah, actually, there's the very small, there's the very big, when it comes to programs and interactions with between residents and staff or between residents, and I'll perhaps start with the very big and move into the very small and talk about a few things that have been happening. The one thing I'm so excited about is we at Caledonia Senior Living formed the first chapter in Illinois of something called Cycling Without Age, which you may have heard of, and I'm sure some of your listeners have been part of. But I'd been sent through social media a video clip of a short film on the BBC called Amazing Human Beings. And it was of a young man in Scotland who took this bicycle, or a kind of, it's almost like an inverted rickshaw. If you can imagine a seat where two seniors It's a very kind of well-made wooden seat, almost like a love seat, is at the front of a bicycle, and then the pilot or the bike rider is at the back steering and riding. And this young man in Scotland took seniors from a community out into the fresh air, and they really, in the film, were just so joyful and singing, and you could see them just really enjoying this moment of excitement out in the fresh air. And I thought, gosh, I think we should do this. And now, as it turns out, there's a wonderful kind of moment of serendipity where we found out that Scotland, and of course we are a Scottish organization, Scotland is the only country in the world where this program, Cycling Without Aid, is a government-sponsored initiative, such as its impact. So we thought the first charity in Illinois, the Chicago Scots, will form the first chapter of Cycling Without Aid. It started, Cycling Without Aid did, over in Denmark, and has now spread to over 40 countries. It's elsewhere in the States, but we thought, in Illinois, cycling's easy because we're pretty flat. But, you know, as you said at the top of the program, we're this community that's very close to downtown Chicago, but we're idyllically set in the Forest Preserve. Very peaceful surroundings. The town that's nearby us, where most of our residents and their families would have come from, is this incredibly beautiful town called Riverside, where there's winding streets and lovely homes, quintessentially Midwestern in its feel, with some Frank Lloyd Wright homes and so on. And we started this program. As it turns out, the ladies who work in McLean House are also avid cyclists, and they said, we'd like to be part of this. We had a launch date where the local community came in and volunteered to be trained as pilots. And now we can take seniors out into the community. They go through the Forest Preserve, past the deer who are grazing in the grove in the middle of the Forest Preserve, into these winding streets. And everybody who sees these trishaws, as they're called, just slowly meandering through the streets will stop and wave, and people cutting their grass will say, hey, how can I get a ride on one of those? Or school kids will ride their bikes past and smile and say hello. And I took a ride with a senior and her grandson, and she came from Riverside, and she said to him as we were slowly riding, now this is the house where I raised your dad. And this is the grocery store where I used to go every week. And here's our church, and there's your father's school. And it connected her not just to back to the life she had and to the community that she felt so strongly about, but it connected her to a new generation in her family in a very powerful way. So this Cycling Without Aid is a program that we're so proud to be part of. And We're grateful to our donors, as you said, the McLean family gave us an incredible gift that allowed us to build the McLean House. And Cycling Without Aid has been made possible by a man named Bob Crawford and his wife Winnie, but also by the chief operating officer of Walgreens Boots Alliance, the pharmacy store. Walgreens is led by a man from Scotland, and he bought us one of the trishaws. So there's Cycling Without Aid is an incredible program, as the very big type of initiative. But if I could just also say, as I was walking through McLean House the other month, there was a resident who had recently moved in, who was having trouble settling into a rhythm in the house. And our staff really got to know him, but more importantly, they got to know his family, his adult children. And they discovered that he was, for many, many years, an administrator of a local hospital. and was quite a high-powered and busy man that was always preparing budgets and paperwork and so on. So they bought him a desk and set it up outside his office, and they used to come with some paper and give it to him every day and say, now, can you have these reports ready for us in an hour and a half? And all of a sudden, he felt like he was again connected to his own identity and immediately began to settle. So I was so impressed that the simple act of getting to know somebody on a level that is less about the moment we live in and perhaps more about the identity of that person over a period of time can have a profound impact on the moment we're all living in. Another program which I'm so impressed by, it gives us it allows us to take that sense of getting to know somebody and have it resonate across our entire community and across a longer period of time, and it involves music. Thanks to the Negaunee Music Institute of Chicago and the Chicago Symphony, there's a group called the Civic Orchestra Fellows who have visited now 3 times to our community. There are young musicians who are part of the Chicago Symphony that have come out to Caledonia Senior Living, have sat with our residents and their families across a period of 4 sessions, and they very purposefully get to know the resident, get to know their family, and they either compose a piece of music that would go along with the performance or telling of a story that really summed up a moment that was important in that person's life, told by the resident themselves or perhaps by one of their family. They'd compose a piece of music, or they would select a piece of music that was particularly powerful at relating the story. And over a period of 4 sessions, they began to really hone in on which stories were important for the individual resident. And then they performed these. There were 6 of them that they ended up performing the first time, which was so impactful to me personally, I think, to us as the community that cares for the people who were telling the stories. It allowed us to get to know the residents in a way that was much deeper. It allowed us to understand who they were. And though the music had stopped and the musicians had long since left, the memory of the experience still lingered, and it actually helped bond our team of staff to residents. And it shows how powerful music can be in reaching people in a way that perhaps words or other types of culture can't. Music to me is one of the most powerful connectors that is out there. So those are 3 examples, big and small, of programs that we're very proud of at Caledonia Senior Living.
Well, I think that's fantastic. When you were talking about the symphony, I thought, I have to connect you with Cindy Lazinski, who is in charge of Northern Colorado's Dementia Friendly Group, and they have a program called B-Flat, and they are working with their symphony, and they've actually been doing some research behind the impact of the music and the outing on both, I believe, the person with dementia and their care partner. And you might find some synergy there. And earlier on another show, I had mentioned that there is the World Council for Dementia is doing a survey, and they are really looking to see, you know, what are the programs that are out there, and then who has research behind them. And I kind of laughed and I said, a lot of us, it takes us a while just to find the money to get the program, let alone be able to do the research project behind it. But that is something that they are kind of working together with other organizations to see if they can move that forward, so there can be more kind of proof in the pudding and be able to get more people involved in some of these great projects. I love...
I'd love to meet them. I'd love to talk to them. Thank you.
Yeah, I will definitely connect you. Cindy's just a little powerhouse and a very good friend of mine. And then I love the cycling of age. I just think that is so cool. And I've seen some videos on YouTube where it's just one person pedaling and then a seat in front. But it sounds like yours has a seat, almost like a love seat, where two people can sit on the bike. Is that correct?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. They're not hard to ride, as I discovered. They're quite heavy, the bikes. They're very sturdy and well made, but they're e-bikes, so there's a little motor, and you just, for the very slight turn of the hand, you can engage this motor and look like you've got this great stride as you're kind of pedaling behind them, and you give the false impression that you're doing all the work, whereas the motor is really kicked in. So they're easy to ride. The best way to take a ride on them is to go slowly. You know, it's not to go fast. It's to really enjoy the moment and the feeling of being back in nature with the wind in your hair is such an empowering and exhilarating experience.
Mm-hmm.
As we were talking about the music, you know, the there were four performances that really grabbed me and had me at one moment roaring with laughter, and the next moment I had tears running down my face. In fact, I did about three or four times. You know, I should dispel a myth, Laurie, that the Scots are these stoic people. If you show me a picture of a puppy, I'll begin blubbering and crying. You know, I was at the end of the line when they gave out stoicism. This particular Scotsman is the least stoic person you'll find. But the performances of music, one resident was, the story he told was of a time where he was on a military boat in the South Pacific. And on a very still evening, when there were clouds covering every star in the sky, in the middle of the night, the power on the boat went out. So he was a physics teacher by profession. And he said, you know, I wonder what it feels like to go and experience total silence and stillness and total darkness. So he went and laid on the deck of the ship. And slowly, as he was looking up at the sky, the clouds began to part. And every star, as he said, described it to me, he said it was as if every star in the universe introduced itself to him. And all these stars came out and began to twinkle and so on. So the young musician who was playing with him asked himself if he could tell that story. And he wrote a piece for three other musicians to perform. And he performed it literally for Ian, the resident. And at the end of it, Ian stood up and he went over and he said, it was as if you were lying beside me on the ship. And of course, all of us had tears on our faces. The next performance was a lady who had lived in a town very close to the community, in a town called Berwyn. And her father had a general store when she was growing up. And several of her regular customers in the store were nuns from the local community. And she and her friends used to hide in one of the closets in the store. And as the nuns were going up to the counter to pay for the things they were buying, they'd, through a crack in the closet door, put a little pea shooter out of the closet and shoot peas at the nuns, who, of course, had no idea where these peas were coming from. And it was just this wonderfully kind of irreverent and funny story that described the resident perfectly. And then the last one I'll mention is of a lady who, if you had 30 seconds with her, you'd recognize the grace in the way that she reached for the salt and pepper across the table, or the way she turned a page in the book in the library. There was a certain presence and gracefulness about her. And as it turns out, she had been a dancer on some of the most prestigious stages around the world. She asked if the musicians would play a tango for her, because this was the dance that really her passion was for. And so they performed this tango, and as this incredibly graceful lady sat there listening, one single tear just ran down her cheek. And in that moment, I thought they've reached something in there that is impossible to reach in any other way. And of course, that we all then had a different appreciation and understanding for her and for her life and for her passions. And that's what we're all here to do. To you know, back to the thing that my friend said that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, they may not remember us, but we must remember them.
Very true, very true. When you were telling that story about the one tear, I'm like, oh, here I go. I'm going to start crying just listening to the story, because it's just so beautiful. But it's about those moments, and it's about training staff and family to notice those moments. I think one of the problems that we have in this fast-paced world is we don't slow down enough to appreciate and to connect on a nonverbal level, because a lot of times people, you know, lose their verbal abilities, and we're kind of clawing at them saying, you know, talk to me, say my name, and they're so, you know, three quarters of our communication is through nonverbals, and we have to teach people to look for those, because in my experience anyways, those are the powerful moments. Those are the things that melt into your heart and you don't forget. It's not the words, it's the expression. And
exactly,
it's that picture painted in your head forever of what that experience was like, you know. And there's that saying, it doesn't make any difference you know, what you do, it's how you make people feel. And it sounds like you guys really embrace, you know, that philosophy of touching hearts. Now, it's apparent that your one-on-one engagement with residents is extremely important to you, and through your storytelling. I mean, it's so apparent that it brings people together. But do you find that these programs also make it easier for families and their loved ones to connect on more personal levels? Because sometimes, you know, we as staff can do that, but families still are uncomfortable. And so what have you seen with family in terms of how it's impacted them?
You know, that's a really important question and point. The community that Caledonia Senior Living is really built on three innovations, on an architectural innovation, an operational innovation, and philosophical innovation. And those are really the bones and structure of the building. In architectural innovation, it's built to be as, I'm talking about the McLean House here, but it could be equally true of the legacy buildings at the Scottish Home, where people immediately say, this doesn't feel like an institution, this feels like home in every way. An operational innovation is where we really want to see meaningful interaction increased as much as possible through the design of the work that people do. We don't want residents to feel like, and their families to feel like, there is a kind of rotating door of different people turning up every time they need something. If you can build a truly engaging and familiar relationship, then the issues of unfamiliarity and paranoia and distrust and all of the problems that come with those negative feelings can be minimized and eliminated, hopefully. The philosophical innovation is really as I mentioned before, the guys in the ties don't know really about what's in the best interests of the daily rhythm of the home. It's really the people who know the residents best who can make those decisions. So to put power, decision-making power, and to empower the frontline staff and the teams that are within the home to start making crucial decisions was important. But we realized when we opened the door that there is a fourth innovation that was crucial to get to the issue that you're really talking about. And that are, what are the things we can do to engage the residents through programming or through simple acts of understanding and compassion and care and so on, to communicate, to bond with the people around them, their friends and family, their kith and kin and so on. So we're making an investment in formal programs like Cycling Without Age and the Civic Orchestra Fellows Program and training for staff, which is so important, not just in the vocational training, but in the how do you recognize those nonverbal signs that you were mentioning before and so on. Because the true mark of success of our homes, I don't believe will actually happen within the homes. The true measure of success is if the daughter of a resident can go home and be unburdened from worry and stress and concern about her mother and go into her personal life and enjoy an unstressed dinner with her spouse or her family or her own children, and can go into her professional life and be present and productive. And if we can have the moments of understanding resonate beyond the walls and beyond the boundaries of our campus, then I think we're truly doing something that will be as powerful as I can hope and imagine. The kind of incredible moment where one of those daughters came onto our campus and I saw her as she walked in, and I said, "You look incredible. You look refreshed and so on." And I recognized that she didn't have that look of that people get in their eye when they've had lack of sleep because they've been up worrying all night about family. You know, the true measure of success of our organization is measured in whether that daughter can put her head on the pillow in the evening and sleep soundly. Yes, of course it is measured in pounds, shillings and pence and dollars and cents and all the things that we need to be able to do to survive. But the real thing that will have an impact far beyond anything else is what happens to the family. So I'm so grateful that you should ask about the family relationship as well as the other programmatic things we're doing.
Well, I love that you really have a good grasp of that, because I think so often companies are so narrow focused on what happens within their building and what they see as in their control. And I truly believe that you know, what you're doing in terms of understanding, being able to read the comfort level of families is huge. I have a thing called, when I do training, called family by choice, that, you know, staff are family by choice. They're not replacing family. And sometimes families feel like they've been replaced, or they're even shunned sometimes by staff for not coming around as much. And that can be frustrating and add even more guilt to a family member. And then I have a philosophy which I call the hybrid caregiver car e-giver. And the car stands for conscious awakening of relationships. And the e-givers are all about the emotional giving. And it sounds like you really understand the importance of that emotional giving, that it's not so much about the task. It's about how we do the task, how we engage, because it's about, you know, is the person, you know, safe, happy, and pain-free? That trumps, you know, getting it done, because, you know, mm-hmm. it's quality of life and how would we want to be treated?
Exactly. My grandmother's favorite word was serendipity. And she said to me when I moved to Chicago, she said, the one thing I want you to take us is serendipity is all around you. All you have to do is recognize it and welcome it into your life. And I view the things we do as being an embodiment of that. There are chances to connect. There are opportunities to help. There are opportunities at every moment to make a moment better for someone. And I think in the Jewish faith and in the Muslim faith, there is a saying that if you save one life, you save the world. Well, if we can all do one thing in that moment where we have an opportunity, it can be an incredibly powerful thing. So no matter who you are, I think you've got an opportunity to make a life better, a moment better. One of the folks who works on our team, he works in the housekeeping department. His name's Keenan, and he is such a warm, generous colleague. But more than that, he connects to people, no matter who you are, in a way that is really powerful and unique. And he'll invest in the moment where he's with you. He's totally talking to you. And I've seen him talk to other staff, but more importantly, I'll see him as he's in, you know, a resident's apartment and suite, cleaning their emptying their trash or something. I'll see him just talking to them about grandparents or grandkids' baseball games or the photographs that they have. And as I walk past the room and see this happening, it puts a kind of spring in the step to see those moments. You know, Robert Burns, if you give a Scotsman an opportunity the floor, a microphone, or an opportunity to speak, sooner or later he's going to mention Robert Burns. And here's the moment for me. He had a line in one of his poems called "Catch the Moments as They Fly." It's an incredible, beautiful way of saying enjoy those particular moments of serendipity where you have an opportunity to make a moment better. You know, an example of that, I suppose, though it happened when I first moved or first started at the community, there was a lady called Katie who had lived at the Scottish Home in our legacy building for several years, and we knew that we were probably entering the last days of Katie's life. And it was in the winter, and Katie was very frail, and it was on one of those particularly cold, biting Chicago evenings in the Midwest where the wind was howling, and her bedroom overlooked the forest, and snow was falling, and it was being kind of blown gently across the window, and the light from her window was causing the snow to look like it was kind of drifting by, almost like the window of a train. And she said to the staff, I want to feel the snow on my face one more time. And there was just no way we could do that. Katie was too frail. It was too cold outside. But the staff quickly ran out and gathered up some snow in a bowl, and they gently let it fall onto Katie's face as she lay in her room. And I thought, what a wonderful way of giving Katie the opportunity to make a decision, to be the director of that own particular part of her life. And that really taught me what our philosophy was all about from that moment on. I think it was such an instructive thing to see and hear about. I'm so grateful to Katie for teaching me that.
Well, it's a beautiful story. And one of the things as you were telling it, it was like, you know, the staff was attentive to her and met her needs. But I was also thinking how fulfilled they felt doing that and being able to bring somebody joy and contentment. And I think sometimes that is so overlooked, the importance that this is a two-way street. We are not just giving care to people, but we are relationship-based. And, you know, when you do something kind for someone else, it fills you. And it's, you know, and you don't do those things to get filled. It just happens. And like you said, they can be life-changing moments, just life-changing moments. I have a signature story called Betty the Bald Chicken that talks specifically about those moments. And it was one that came to me in a dream. And it's kind of funny and it's kind of silly because people get these rubber chickens and these Mardi Gras beads with bald chickens on them. But they remember the story, and it's all about living in the moment and that we always have a choice and we're not always going to make the best choice. You know, there's going to be moments where we walk away from somebody. There's going to be moments where we're shunned by others. There's going to be, you know, that's called life. But we always have another opportunity, and for things that we feel guilty for not doing the right way, we have an opportunity to learn from that and make a different decision, you know, in the next moment. And, you know, we have to stop kind of beating ourselves up and just move forward and do better, because we all can do better. And even when we do something great, it can still always be improved. Everything is fluid. And, you know, that seems to be what I hear with your philosophy, that you're always looking for new ways to improve. One of the things that I loved is when you talked about having the staff, you know, being in a power decision-making mode, allowing that, you know, your direct line staff. That is so critical, and a lot of organizations don't allow that, and yet they're the ones that know the residents the best. They know the families the best because they're around them, and I think that, of course, there's got to be some balance with everything, but I think that that is a critical, critical mode, and, you know, typically when you do that, you reduce your turnover in terms of staff as well. And that is something I know all around the country and actually all around the world, people are struggling with staffing. And you had mentioned that again, is important to you to not kind of have this rotating door, but to have some normalization and some routine. And so that people aren't always faced with a new face, that there is that familiarity, you know, between resident and staff. And that is, I think, a very, very critical piece too. In wrapping up, Gus, what is like one big takeaway that you would like our listeners to walk away with today?
You know, I think I'll tell a story about another member of our team that really reflects what you've just said about familiarity and having a consistent relationship with staff and residents. As we were designing the Caledonian House that became McLean House recently when we dedicated the homes, I mentioned that we took 18 months with our senior team and frontline caregivers to design the home. I was playing a role with one of the exercises. It was about communication. We wanted to really have an appreciation of the way in which we communicate. So the exercise involved two people sitting back to back, and one of the people had to describe a picture in front of them, which was of a circle with a triangle and then another shape, a funny angle and a star. And, you know, it was a geometric type picture. they had to describe it, and then the other person sitting back to back with them had to draw what they heard. And of course, there were all different variations depending on how communication was received and transmitted and so on. I happened to be sitting back to back with a lady called Crystal, who is one of our caregivers. And as we were doing this, word came down and into the room from our director of nursing that a resident who was a friend of mine through the Scottish community, she had been involved in some of the celebrations of Robert Burns and so on, became a resident of the home, and word came down that sadly she'd passed away. Her name was Margaret. And I said to Crystal, in the middle of this exercise, Crystal, I'm sorry to tell you that Margaret has passed away. She was, I know, very dear to you, and you were also dear to her. And Crystal looked at me and then kind of looked off into to middle distance, and she said, yes, Margaret was lovely. And so was her mother. And I took care of her mother when she lived here 30 years ago. And I thought that's not something you're going to hear in every community. That's an incredible thing that Crystal just shared with me. And I think to kind of sum everything up, it gave me a sense of familiarity, of home, of family, of all the things that we started and have touched on throughout the time together today. So those are the things that make us who we are. We define ourselves. You know, Bob Dylan recently said, America is about designing yourself. Well, I believe that to be true. We do it through what we make as our home and the people around us who we have as friends and family, and the cultural things, our passions, our purposes, and so on. And Crystal really got to understand what Margaret's and her mother's and our community's purpose and passions and personalities were. And it taught me a very valuable lesson that day. So that's who we are. And if we could all be like Keenan and Crystal and Margaret and Katie, I think the world would be better.
What a beautiful way to wrap up. And in terms of just, you really, I mean, I can hear it in your voice, you really value your residents and your staff at all levels. And that's a really beautiful thing. And that's not something that you can mask. You know, that is something that really makes a big difference in any organization, when people are, you know, feel like they belong, no matter where they're positioned in it. You know, if they're a client, a resident, if they're a staff member, if they're administrative, housekeeping or maintenance, you know, it sounds like everybody has an equal role and value in terms of Caledonia House, and that's quite beautiful. Now, people can contact Caledonia Senior Living and Memory Care by just going to caledoniaseniorliving.org, or they can call 708-447-5098. Again, that is caledoniaseniorliving.org, and that's CALED is in dog, ONIA, and then senior, SENIOR, and then living, LIVING.org. And again, the phone number is 708-447-5092. Is there anything else that you would like to share, you know, with us on maybe even summing up with, how do you think families are able to incorporate some of these best practices that you've talked about in your memory care in their own daily lives?
Wow, that's a great question. The, you know, let's think about the midnight painters, and let's think about cycling without age, and the music program, are there ways that you can have conversations, or perhaps even, as you said, Laurie, the conversations without words that happen when you take our loved ones, our families, out into the places where their passions were stoked, you know, their identities were formed, to ask them what music, you know, why they chose particular to do particular things, or what was important to them. Think about the moments that they've had that will make the moment we're in a bit better. And there's so many ways to do it. Every moment, as my grandmother said, is a moment to make better. And welcome serendipity into our lives.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm just going to mention a resource that might be helpful to some of our listeners and even to Caledonia Place. It's called mariasplace.com, and it offers a ton of free activities that you can do, from crafts to physical exercise to, I think there's meditation, all kinds of things. And it'll tell you what you need to buy for supplies. It'll give you a video of what it looks like in the process, and it adapts to different levels of need as well. And it's just mariasplace.com. It's a wonderful, wonderful resource for people to engage. And I would like to just also add on that, you know, some of the most special moments are when we're doing absolutely nothing. I mean, I think of visiting with my mom, and the safest place I could ever be was just sitting next to her, maybe holding her hand, not saying anything. And again, sometimes we undervalue not doing something. And yet when the person with dementia is at peace, we are at peace as well. And we need to share that. We can share peacefulness and calm and joy. And we just have to look for it and then duplicate it. It's very simple. But it's a big switch sometimes for people to be able to feel that they can be still. And again, I think it's very much, very much worth the time. Well, thank you, Gus, so much again for sharing with us today. You guys are doing fabulous work, and I hope to connect with you when I'm out in Illinois yet this fall. It would be fun to actually come out and visit and see the site and see everything in action there. So again, thank you so much for your time and helping us raise awareness during World Alzheimer's Month. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure, and I appreciate you doing what you do. Thank you.
Thank you. And in wrapping up, I just again want to thank everybody for joining us today on Alzheimer's Speaks, where our focus again is to shift our dementia care culture around the world from crisis to comfort. So subscribe today and continue to learn about new techniques and tips and resources to help you live graciously with dementia. Get ideas from other people through the stories that we share here. That's what it's all about, is just getting us excited and empowered to make a difference. And each one of us has the ability to do that. Don't forget to check out our main website, alzheimerspeaks.com, where you can connect with a lot of our initiatives and get information on keynotes and training and various social media platforms as well. And last, don't forget about being a guest on our show. I'd love to hear from you. So there's a big contact button there. Reach out to me and talk to me. Until next time, thank you so much.